Welcome to the X-Men Task Podcast. My name is Willie Simpson.
And my name is Sonia Rappaport.
Oh my god, your last name. It is revealed at last. Today we are talking about, I believe it's the sixth episode of season two, known as Externally Yours. And it is the Gambit backstory episode.
Really cool.
And this is, I'd have to say right off the bat, this is one of the most memorable episodes of the entire series.
You think so?
Yeah. And for a lot of strange reasons. There's just something about it that's, well, first of all, Gambit is a great character on the show. Mm-hmm. So getting, like, a hint of what his backstory is, even though by the time the episode ends, you're left probably scratching your head more about his backstory than
you
went into. I think I'm very confused right now. We just watched this.
Yeah.
I'm like, I have a lot of questions. I'm very perplexed.
All right.
But you sound like you're a Gambit expert.
No, I'm not a Gambit expert. It's just like, it's only one episode explaining his backstory. So there's definitely more stories that could unfold from it.
Right.
But it's wrapped up pretty nicely, I think. It gives you a little taste of, like, where he's from and his family history. And, you get the main events of his life before.
Well, you get a sense of where he's from, for sure.
Yeah.
And who his family is.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the details of it. But the specifics that are shown and explained are completely nonsensical.
Okay,
yeah. And bizarre. So that's my only point about it.
Yeah.
By the way, Sonia, welcome back to the show.
Oh, thanks.
We missed you last time.
I missed you, too.
Yep. You know, we talked about the last episode, Repo Man, mm-hmm. which was a bit of Wolverine's backstory.
Yeah.
And we also talked a bit about Spider-Man Homecoming.
Mm-hmm. So, I know, actually.
Oh, you do?
Yeah. I'm all caught up to speed.
And does that mean you saw Spider-Man as well?
That's right.
Oh, really? What do you think?
It was great.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Any thoughts about it before we delve into this Gambit-sode?
I mean, I won't go into it too much because...
Well, how about just a little bit?
You talked about it pretty extensively.
Yeah. I'm just curious about a little bit of your opinions.
I really liked it. I thought the characterization was great. The casting was impeccable.
Mm.
I just thought it was, like... Peter Parker is supposed to be young and in high school, and it actually shows him as young and in high school with, like, all the limitations that should entail.
Mm-hmm.
And
a lot of the appropriate energy that he has as a young person, too. He's
right.
Really spunky and full of verve.
Totally, yeah. Like, just a lot of energy in general, which is good. That's exactly how teenagers can be a lot of mm-hmm. times, you know. And then I also really liked their portrayal of New York City as, like, a real place and not
right.
as some, like, shiny Hollywood set New York City. It was, like...
And you speak of that with the authority of a real New Yorker.
I do.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So. But you're a Brooklyner. You're not a Queens lady.
Right.
No, I'm just saying that.
I feel this has been a leading line of questioning.
Any last thoughts on the movie?
No. I'm assuming everyone who's listening here has probably already seen...
Well, we can't really assume that, but... You have some spoilers you want to mention?
No, because you had spoilers all over your last one. So
right, but they might have skipped that part. Because,
oh, yeah, right, maybe.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, maybe not then. But anyway, if you haven't seen it, go see it, because it's great.
Okay, how many spiders do you give it?
5 spiders.
Out of 5?
Yes.
5 out of 5 spiders?
Yep.
That's a high spider rating.
I agree.
Okay, cool. Oh, what do you think about the Google News alert that we just got before we started the podcast?
Oh, yeah. That Tom Holland and how do you say your name? Zendaya or Zendaya?
I say Zendaya. Huh. That sounds more exotic to me.
Yeah, I never had Disney Channel, so I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know about her either.
Yeah.
But anyway, what's the hot, juicy gossip?
Well, they're dating.
In real life.
In real life.
Right.
IRL.
Yeah. I always find that a bit weird.
Why?
Because that the same thing happened with Andrew Garfield and Emma Stone.
Yeah, it happens all the time. It's because those two people are, like, smushed up next to each other for months on end and, like, don't really get to converse with anybody else.
Well, not so much in this past. Zendaya wasn't in it that much.
She
was only in it a little bit, right?
No, I don't know. She was in it.
She was in it, but she wasn't, like...
Like, pretty extensively.
She wasn't in it as much as Ned.
Right, okay.
Or, you know...
She Marissa
was in,
Tomei.
She was, yeah, she was in it as much as Robert Downey Jr. was in it.
Uh-huh.
Which is, like, just a bit past a cameo.
No, she had a part.
Yeah, she had a part. That's what I mean. Past a cameo. It was anyway, a part. It was a small part.
I don't think it's surprising at all. It happens all the time on movie sets.
Oh, Jennifer Lawrence and Nicholas Holt, the guy who played Beast, dated while they were
X-Men. Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
Right.
I know it happens all the time.
But for some reason, I'm always shocked. All right, anyway, back to Gambit and Externally Yours. Uh-huh. This episode opens in a really sort of awesome sequence. So earlier in the season, we saw Wolverine in the Danger Room fighting, a bunch of Cyclops monsters. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean, the ancient Greek, monsters that were known as the Cyclops. I mean, Wolverine was fighting Cyclops, the character, in, robot form.
Yeah. Why would you go to the Greek one? We're talking about X-Men.
No, because I just by the phrase Cyclops monsters. I know. That just stuck out in my head right away that I felt like I had to differentiate.
Okay.
So here it's kind of it's similar, but now it's Cyclops fighting a bunch of, other monsters.
Right. Well, realistic monsters for the most part.
Yeah.
It's like...
Yeah, but it's Cyclops is, in the Danger Room, sequence.
Yeah.
Which kind of, seemed like a really cool video game to me. It's if you were making Cyclops the video game, which, I have to say, video game developers, if you're out there, not a bad premise for a video game. He's of all the characters to make a video game franchise about, he's pretty good. He's got shooting,
but also, this is, the Danger Room is really, virtual reality to the max.
Yes.
You know, this is the pinnacle of VR technology that they're using there.
It's scary VR.
Yeah.
So, at first he's fighting this really weird, he's on the episode cold opens on this weird desolate alien world, which is another nice X-Men touch. The X-Men are often in alien environments in the comic books anyway. I don't think we've seen them yet in alien worlds in the show, but that's a staple of them. So to see him on a weird, bizarre alien planet was cool. And he's fighting this weird, worm monster with big teeth.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of something out of, Guardians of the Galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it reminded me of, the monster in the beginning of Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
Yeah, all the teeth and, squirmy tentacles.
Yeah, so he's fighting it, and he dispatches it really easily. And then it turns out, surprise, he's in the Danger Room. And Gambit's the one running his session. And Gambit's just kind of relaxed in there, flipping his cards around.
Yeah.
And Cyclops is mad at him. He's like, come on, Gambit, crank it up.
Yeah.
He's like, our enemies aren't going to take it easy on us. And
fair point.
Gambit just kind of dismisses this at first, but then he gets a call on his cell phone, which I guess they had cell phones by 1993 or 4.
Mm-hmm. Well, fancy people did.
Right, yeah, Gambit,
Gambit and Zach Morris.
Right. They're kind of in the same oeuvre. Pretty boys. So Gambit gets a distressing phone call. We're not really sure what's going on, but it's bad. He runs out of the room, but before he does, again, we see this Danger Room meter.
The Danger-o-meter.
Yeah, that has no safety latch on it. And he just accidentally presses it up to, the max.
Yeah.
And, a whole bunch of, when that happens, there's a whole bunch of flashing lights that go off that say, hey, you've done something really stupid in the Danger Room.
Right.
But Gambit's too...
He's out of there.
Distracted to notice. Yeah. He runs away. So when the Danger Room is turned up to the max for Cyclops, it's quite the challenge is presented to him.
Mm-hmm.
He has to fight Omega Red, Apocalypse, Mr. Sinister, and Juggernaut all at the same time.
Right.
And then out of nowhere...
He actually easily defeats them, one after another.
At first. But then there's also a huge green lizard monster attacks him, too.
Right, who we don't know.
Yeah, so at first he's kind of, blasting them away, and you're like, okay, well, maybe the Danger Room, they're not really, obviously, the enemies.
Yeah.
But then quickly the enemies recover.
Right.
And then, Apocalypse grows to, 20 feet tall and smashes him.
Yeah.
And then out of nowhere, that monster that he blew up in the first few minutes of
the episode,
it comes back, and it's about to eat him. It's at this point that Rogue, who's enjoying a nice coffee, as we've seen her do many times before in the series for some reason.
Uh-huh.
She's always drinking coffee.
Yeah, she coffee's good.
Right. She notices she notices all the warning bells going off. I'm just going to run over that coffee's good line. We strongly disagree about that. She she runs over and she turns off the Danger Room right before he's about to be eaten. So, and he's, he's extremely hurt. But this leads to my question to you. Who you are an expert on virtual reality and holograms. I'm just throwing that out there to the audience who might not know that. Was Cyclops... sorry, I just burped. Was Cyclops about to be eaten?
Yeah, presumably.
So you think those holograms could, like, eat him?
Yeah.
And kill him by eating?
Yeah.
Okay.
They ripped up his clothes and, like, broke his ribs and stuff.
Right.
Like,
oh, you're right. Yeah, his ribs did
Holograms
break.
Probably don't distinguish between alive Cyclops and dead Cyclops,
but
right?
It's like, such weird technology. It's like, these holograms, they're actually, like, causing him serious bodily harm.
Yeah.
It's just... But the second Rogue turns off the machine, they disappear into nothingness.
Yeah, because she turned off the machine.
It's just quite the invention, is all I'm saying. It's well, Professor X is sitting on some insane tech in his mansion.
I know. Yeah.
All right. So anyway, that's just like a side little... you know, subplot that really has no payoff or anything.
Well, no, I think I was thinking about this actually at the end of the episode. I think it's that like Julia Leewald was saying, like there's kind of too many main characters already, right? Like with all the different X-Men that they've introduced.
Yeah.
And they have to just kind of pick like a set of a few of them to focus on in each episode.
Right.
Otherwise it's too scattered.
Right.
Like if you're a kid and you're tuning in for the first time.
So we had to get Cyclops
there's no,
out of the
like,
action.
Catching up right on like, you know, Netflix or anything, then like or whatever, Hulu, whatever, then like you have to just like pare it down to a few and you have to give a logical reason that not everybody else is there for the viewers that do know about all the other characters.
That's true.
You know?
But then even beyond that, there's some characters they don't even mention. Like, where's Beast and Storm in this episode?
Yeah, that's true.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, maybe not.
No, that. I don't know. I'm just saying. But anyway, that it's, you know, Cyclops almost dies. And then when it cuts to commercial, and then we come back from commercial, Cyclops, in his almost dead hysteria, narrates what just had happened.
Right.
He's like, Gambit, stop. You've turned the danger room on too high, and I almost died.
Yeah.
I mean, he doesn't say that, obviously, but, you know, he catches us up in his... You know, that happens a lot in the show.
Right.
Is where a character is in, like, total distress, and they just kind of recap the events of
well,
what
yeah.
had happened.
I mean, what if you missed it, and you came in after the commercial break?
And you're wondering why Cyclops is almost dead.
Yeah.
He's gonna tell you.
That's right. Thanks, Cyclops.
Yeah, thanks, Cyclops. anyway, so, you know, Cyclops is in the ER. Gambit has run away. He's taken one of the little X-Men mini-jets, as we've seen now in almost every episode, which is kind of funny. Mm-hmm. They all seem to have their own personal mini-jet, and this jet can fly anywhere in the world.
Oh, I didn't think it was personal. I thought it was just like they had a few on hand.
Yeah,
you
probably,
could, like,
they're not personal.
One out.
Right, yeah. But they're personal in the sense that they
fit
one person.
Yeah,
right,
gotcha. Yeah.
So Gambit flies off to the Bayou country. There's, like, a shot later where... I'm presuming it's Louisiana.
Yeah.
Obviously, like, so that's where he's from in the comics.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a shot where, like, Jean's looking at a map, and it shows both Louisiana and Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
And it went by too fast, and I was too lazy to pause it to see. So, I don't know. Maybe he's in Mississippi for some reason, but let's just say he's in Louisiana. Right?
I mean, usually when you think of, like,
Cajun
culture, it's Louisiana. But.
Right. And so, basically, we're very quickly introduced into what's going on when Gambit arrives. He meets, like, some of his old buddies. It turns out Gambit was in the Thieves Guild.
Mm-hmm. Which isn't really explained here. These are the lingering questions that you mentioned earlier, I believe.
It's not explained, but they're shown in a sense. Like, so we get a flashback into Gambit's youth, which presumably happened 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So we see a younger Gambit with, like, a ponytail.
Right.
He still has the black eyeballs and
yeah,
black
and red
eyeballs.
Yeah, but he has on this, like, bright yellow shirt. He doesn't have any
yeah,
of his,
he doesn't have his fancy
his gear.
But that's another funny thing, that in the present day, all of Gambit's Thieves Guild associates all have, like, similar Gambit outfits.
Oh, I know. They have, like, matching trench coats.
Yeah, they all have matching trench coats, and they all have, like, similar...
Well, you have to be able to, like, identify them as the Thieves Guild.
Right. But
know?
It's just funny that it's, like, it's not so much Gambit's personal style.
Uh-huh.
It's, like, he's part of... His clothing reflects
his
whatever
past
his past and culture is.
Right. But also visually, you know, these are characters you just met, so...
Right. So it's, like, Team Gambit.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So, but that's just fun. It's, like, a funny detail how, you know, as a kid that makes,
I mean, it makes
perfect
sense
and
yeah.
you wouldn't question it. As an adult, it's a little more funny just to notice.
Like, do you dress like all your friends?
Right. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, in a way, like, probably, you know.
Yeah, right, but not with, like, such, like, huge... identifiers.
You don't have matching jackets.
Yeah, we don't
you
have like
friends.
Yeah, yeah. You'll end up on a government watch list, like in high school with the trench coat mafia or something. Remember that? Okay. Anyway, remember the 90s. So the backstory is all right. This is where it gets truly insane, and it's almost going to be hard to explain. So every 10 years, there's these two guilds, the Thieves Guild and the Assassins Guild. Obviously, both underworld clans based in crime, but with their own highly ritualized, like, rituals, for lack of a better term.
Okay.
And so their main ritual around their main ritual revolves around bringing a what's known as a tithe to this swamp magic woman named the External every 10 years. And you have to bring the tithe at the exact right time, and it has to be a true tithe. It can't be a false one. And if you do, the External will grant you awesome magical powers while banishing the other team if they mess up to some fate worse than death.
Well, no, it's that, like, if you've done it, then, like, the tithe has automatically granted you magical powers, right? If you do it correctly the next time, your powers get amplified.
Right, that's right. Okay, right? Yeah. And then, but you can mess up, though, and there's great punishment.
Right.
And,
Is tithe, like, is that, like, a normal word that people use for it?
I think it's a word from, like, religious ceremonies.
It's almost like it's like a vocab word that they're trying to teach. Yeah, they just say it over and over again.
Yeah, it's a word that's...
The tithe.
It's like if it was an episode of Sesame Street, tithe, or Pee Wee Herman, tithe would be the secret word
right,
of the day.
Exactly.
Yeah. They're just constantly going on about these tithes, and they're just little golden dinky boxes, and you don't see what's inside the box.
Right.
I don't know. That's, like, the first...
It's like an
bizarre
offering, basically, right?
An offering of what, like, gold? Gold or money? Is there, like, is it all the gems they steal on their missions?
Who knows?
Yeah.
It could be a severed thumb.
Right. What? Why would you guys think that?
I don't know, because it's this weird, like, swamp goddess or something.
Yeah, I know.
And who knows?
And
I'm just saying.
Let's talk about
totally
this
random
swamp goddess lady. First of all, it's pretty clear that the voice actress doing her is Storm.
Yeah.
And so that's funny. But also, it's like, this swamp goddess, like, has the littlest amount of patience of any, like, person in the world.
I know. I just assumed she was really busy and she had other swamps to pop
in. I know. It's like, what? It doesn't seem like she's doing anything else other than, like, attending this one meeting every 10 years, and she's really serious about it.
Every swamp in the whole world, maybe that's a 10-year circuit if you only give 5 minutes
to
each one.
She's got a covenant with the Thieves and the Assassin's Guild, and it seems really special to her. And she's very offended when things don't go just as she planned it for hundreds of years.
I guess.
So she's very, like, very persnickety about the whole situation.
That's true.
So in this flashback, like, she is very mad at the Thieves Guild because they're, like, literally 2 seconds late.
Yeah.
They, like, the Assassin's Guild puts the tithe down. Then she's like, all right, Thieves, where are you? And the guy steps up with the thing and she's like, you're late. Fuck you. And she banishes the one guy to, like, she says, a darkness never ending. And my question is, and then she blasts him with, like, purple energy and he disappears into nothingness.
Uh-huh.
And she says,
is this your question to me as an expert in darkness?
Well, and an expert in, like, swamp magic. Is it, like, even worth it to be part of this whole, like, Assassin and Thieves Guild if, like, the potential punishment seems to be one worse than death?
Well,
because we don't even know if this guy dies. It seems like he's sent to some horrible other dimension where he can't die.
But we also don't really know what kind of powers they get if they do it right.
Well, we see it. Well,
and what the amplification means. Well, we see it in one person. We don't see it, like, across the board.
And she's pretty powerful, though.
She's pretty powerful, yeah.
I mean, her powers are standard in the X-Men world. The character who gets powers from the Assassin Guild, her name is Belle. And first of all, when she gets her powers, the swamp lady gives her, like, a fancy new outfit, too.
Yeah.
And by the way, if this is, like, a secret, like, based on, like, a real religion and religious ceremonies, and I apologize for, like, calling her a swamp lady and everything, you know?
Like, yeah, but, like, what is she?
I don't know. Anyway.
Someone let us know.
So, like, maybe it's, like, someone let us know. Is this, like, based on, like, actual voodoo rituals or something? Or maybe. Probably not. I mean, I don't know. Anyway, so the power Belle is given is, like, laser powers.
Yeah.
And maybe some other weird powers, too. She can, like, put magic in things, like wedding rings, for example.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
Right, we'll get to that. So, anyway, like I said, my question to you, it doesn't seem worth it to be a part of this guild where you could, if you're just, like, 2 seconds late with this so-called tithe, that you could be punished forever in some horrible way.
Uh-huh.
Like, why? And Gambit, of course, quits.
Yeah.
So, like, that's the backstory, is that he left them, and because he sees it as ridiculous.
Well, not because of the tithes and stuff, though. Gambit left because...
Right, there's a little bit more to it.
There was, like, a feud between the Assassin's Guild and the Thieves' Guild.
Well, the feud goes back, like, centuries, apparently.
Yeah, but he sees it as senseless violence, and that's why he leaves.
Yeah.
So it has nothing to do with the powers, yeah, I don't think.
Thieves versus Assassins! Assassins versus Thieves! I'm sick of it! Like, says something like that.
Yeah, right.
And so, I mean, and part of the backstory is that apparently he tried to... marry Belle, who he's in love with, to right. merge the clans together, and then they had to stop it because he said they would have killed us, that they wouldn't have, the clans wouldn't have allowed it to happen,
right?
And that, and he was scared, so he ran away. But Belle is like almost like the classic Southern, like, scorned, like, bride at the altar.
Mm-hmm.
She still, like, has her wedding ring or her, like, veil and wedding dress and stuff.
Yeah.
She's, like, really, like...
She's a real creep.
...looped out of her brain, you know?
Yeah.
I feel like that's also from pop culture history, too. Like, I'm not sure what... It's probably referencing some, like, dusty old movies that I don't really know about. Like, does that happen in Gone with the Wind or something? Like, I don't know. Because that's a trope I've seen before.
Yeah.
Video game nerds and, like, Grim Fandango. Mm. There's, like, a scene where, like, there's, like, a two, like, sort of, like, patrician Southern characters were supposed to get married. Not Grim Fandango. Curse of Monkey Island. I'm confusing my LucasArts adventure games. Where there's... It's, like, just like that. Where they're supposed to get married and there's, like, this ghost that is still wearing her wedding dress and she's got a Southern accent and she's still pining over her, like, marriage that never was.
Mm-hmm.
So I've seen it before. That's all I'm saying. And I bet that, because I've seen it twice now,
yeah,
only in this and that, it has to have been based on something.
Right.
Right. So yes,
yeah,
please, someone let us know.
I don't know. Yeah.
Right. Anyway, so that's, like, the backstory. That's a big part of Gambit's backstory, in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, but he's run away. So, but Jean, Rogue, and Wolverine take it upon themselves. They're really worried about Gambit. So they fly to Louisiana, too, to track him down.
Right.
And there's something about, like, Wolverine is, like, really happy about this mission.
Yeah, he, like, really shows his friendship colors towards Gambit.
Well, not exactly. He's, like, he's happy to go along this mission, but he has, like, this air of superiority the whole time. Because at first he's, like, kind of laughing about it. When he hears it, he's like, oh, we're going to track occasion. He's, like, almost licking his chops.
Yeah.
He's, like,
no,
real excited.
No, but once he gets down there, he's, like, genuinely interested in helping.
He is, but he also... There's a scene where he discovered Gambit's, like, house or the thieves' house.
Yeah.
And he's like, what a dump.
Yeah, I can't believe he lived here.
Yeah, no wonder he's so messed up. Like, that's a real, like, messed up thing to say about your friend or your coworker,
I guess.
And Rogue rightly admonishes him. You know, it's like, I've seen some of the rat holes you've crawled out of.
That's true.
Yeah, Wolverine has no self-awareness. He, like, I think he kind of he doesn't like Gambit.
Right, but then, like, he's really, like, defensive of him. I guess it's just his, like, X-Men loyalty more than anything else.
Yeah, his mutant solidarity.
Yeah, but, like, later on when the fighting gets going, he's, like, really... like, fighting for Gambit, you know?
He is, yeah. We'll get to that, though, because that works up to, like, a bigger point.
Right.
But, yeah, so anyway, Wolverine's kind of real excited to be tracking Gambit in the swamp, although he does deride the swamp as being smelly. Like,
right.
And for him, that's, like, probably especially offensive.
But I think it's also maybe, like, none of them know the backstory of Gambit yet.
Yeah,
like,
they
he hasn't revealed any secrets to anybody.
Rogue knows a little more than the others. She lets loose a few details. Like, she would say, like, oh, Gambit... like, you know, would mention this place, but he didn't really want to talk about it, you know.
Right.
So he told Rogue a little bit.
Right, but I feel like for Wolverine even, you know, it might just
and
be
Jean,
like,
they don't know.
Yeah, they're, like, unraveling mysteries, so it's probably, like, super interesting for them.
The episode opens, the previously on X-Men beginning, opens with all the, like, mysterious moments of Gambit on the show up to this point.
Right.
Where they highlight these things he said where it's like, and other characters have said, like, we don't really know him, you know, and Gambit will say things like, don't get too close.
Yeah.
You know, kind of.
Right.
So, yeah, he's been a mystery up to this point.
Right.
And I remember as a kid, too, I think, like, it's not might be entirely accurate, but when this show was on, and Gambit was still a relatively new character in the comic books, and his mystery, much like Wolverine's in the comics, wasn't fleshed out either. It was a mystery in the books.
Mm-hmm.
So this episode was exciting to see that you would get, like, more of his backstory. And in this episode, they even say his name, Remy LeBeau,
uh-huh,
which wasn't, I don't think, was set up to this point in the show.
Mm.
So that was revealed, his
mm-hmm
real name. And I think in the comic books, too, he didn't even have... He had the name Remy,
mm-hmm,
but his last name was, like, not fully decided at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm only basing that on I had the Marvel trading cards. And, like, one year, it said, like, one last name. Or sometimes it even said an unknown, I think.
Hmm.
And then other years, it had Remy LeBeau, So I don't even know, you know, like his character was
reveal.
Yeah, his character was still like a big mystery. So there's like a lot of like juicy details to get out of this episode. That's why one of the reasons why to me it stands out mm-hmm. as like a classic episode, because it was just like just interesting to learn more about him.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. So all right, so Jean, Rogue, and Wolverine are on his trail. And then Gambit, you know, he's obviously on his own mission trying to the story with Gambit, why he's there now, is his brother Bobby. We learn he has a brother.
Right.
He doesn't look
like him, ironically.
He's blonde. Yeah. Well, and it doesn't seem like he's a mutant either.
Yeah, no.
And then maybe they're not really brothers. Maybe they're the brothers only in like the, like they grew up as like street urchins kind of thing. You know, like, I don't know. Like, we don't know. He probably is his brother, but like whatever. Anyway, Bobby's been captured by the Assassin's Guild. And the Assassin's Guild, I just want to say real quickly, they're, like, kind of funny the way they look.
Mm-hmm.
They've got, like, this weird, like, battle armor with spikes on their shoulder pads.
Yeah,
and
very, like, purple and turquoise.
Yeah, and they have and they all wear masks, and they have green hair.
Yeah.
And so they look kind of cool, but Belle, who leads them, this blonde woman, she's just a pretty, like, young woman.
Right.
She doesn't have, like, weird, like, mask on or anything. Anyway, Bobby, the brother's been captured, and the deal is that Belle wants to trade Bobby his life for the tithe, but the trade-off is that Gambit has to marry Belle, who is still obsessed with Gambit after all these years.
Yeah.
And at this point, like, the episode even goes further off the rails, because, like we said, this Belle character is pretty loopy.
Yeah.
And the first thing she does, like, Gambit immediately agrees to the trade just for the sake of saving his brother's life. It's
right.
Like a no-brainer. He's probably thinking, like, I'll just get out of this in a minute, you know?
Right. He's like, I'll blast my way out with some playing cards.
Right, yeah.
Fine.
The X-Men will probably come get me.
Yeah.
But, like, Belle immediately puts his wedding ring on him. And he's like, what's this? And he just puts it on. He doesn't care.
Yeah.
But it immediately, like, drains his energy. He's got no power. And it, like, causes him to, like, fall
and
to his knees.
And she can, like, shock him with it.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
There's something, like, really anti-feminist.
The old ball and chain.
Yeah. It's like, what's... how would you describe this relationship? Like, what's the message here that, like, women are, like harpies or something, or
you know,
shrews.
If there hadn't been any other like relationship drama or like marriages or anything in the whole X-Men series, I might think that.
Right.
But I think they're just showing that she's insane.
Right.
I don't think it really like
generalizes. They're reflecting some cultural something, some cultural stereotype.
Okay.
Maybe it's more Southern. It might not be anti-feminist. Maybe it's just, like, a more Southern, like, cultural stereotype in a weird way about, like, what women expect out of marriage. I don't know.
Mm.
It's just, like, something's off about it, right?
Yeah. Well,
something's old, like, overly old-fashioned and cartoony.
Yeah.
About her, like, desire. She's, like, cackling over him like
right.
a witch.
Right.
You know? She's, like, the wife from hell kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny. Anyway, you know, at this point, the X-Men, like, bust into this place. The X-Men bust into the Thieves Guild home. And they get into a fight with the thieves, and they really kick their butts.
Yeah. Jean Grey is remarkably useful with her powers in this episode.
Although she does pass out a few times.
Yeah, I noticed that too. But like, I feel like a lot of times she just isn't that useful. She'll like use her mind control once and then she's out of the game for the whole rest of like the episode because she's too tired.
Yeah.
This time she's like in the action a lot.
That's true. She is. And it's like, it's nice to see her not be so like off to the side or...
Yeah.
You know, like, there's, like, a cool scene where there's, like, something's about to fall on them, and she easily uses her mind powers to push it out of the way.
Yeah.
And she also rescues Wolverine, who's, like, at one point blasted into the sky,
mm-hmm.
like, 20,000 feet, and she captures him and brings him down safely.
Right.
So Jean's definitely...
Thanks for bringing up all the examples to support my point.
Well, I was just remembering. I don't know. but there's one cool shot, though, of Wolverine where he gets a thieves guy,
uh-huh.
and he, like, puts his fist under his chin and shoots two of his two outer claws up.
Yeah, to, like, frame his face.
Yeah, like...
Yeah,
it's
that's
like,
my favorite claw configuration that he does.
Yeah, and that's, like, that's really violent and scary, and the guy's really terrified.
Yeah.
I don't think we've seen Wolverine get that close to...
Oh, really?
...stabbing a claw into someone's, you know, skull.
Oh, I thought we had seen the claw control before.
We have seen him before, but, like, not like that. I think that's, like, the first time he's framing someone's face.
Doesn't he say something, like, really menacing also? He said, like, oh, sometimes the claws slip or something like that.
Yeah. That's right. Wolverine's really... It's like, you just wonder, like, how many people he has killed. All right. Anyway, there's some other, like, funny scenes. Like, we see Belle makes Gambit wear a tuxedo. And it's the standard purple bow tie tuxedo we saw at the Cyclops wedding. It's exactly the same suit. But Gambit's still wearing his, like, yoga headscarf thing.
His, like, mask face outline.
Yeah, he's wearing it underneath his tuxedo. And then it seems like it's a pull-off tuxedo.
Yeah, it's like a breakaway.
Yeah, he just, like, tears it off and it neatly falls on the floor. And he's wearing his body armor and everything underneath. Like, yeah. So he put on the pants over his yoga pants and boots and stuff and his, like, you know, probably sweaty pink body armor. Like, yeah. I don't know. It was ridiculous. So that was worth mentioning. Anyway... So, just like 10 years ago, the Assassins and the Thieves, and now the X-Men, oh, the Thieves, not Thieves.
Right.
They show up to the new tithe ceremony. Good Thieves and Tithes. That's what they should have called this episode.
Yeah.
There's a fight that breaks out because the Assassins did a stupid double cross where they gave the Thieves, like, a fake tithe.
Right. And, which doesn't make sense anyway, because why would the Thieves be getting the tithe from their rival team?
The Assassins stole it.
Oh, that was the thing.
And the Assassins have more power from the last encounter, so they've really been messing with the Thieves for the past 10 years.
Just say Thieves.
This bothers me too much to hear Thieves. Fine. So there's a fight. We see Belle's powers there. She blasts Rogue, and Rogue, like, flies, like, almost, like, a mile away, knocking over 12 trees.
Yeah.
And then when she comes back, it's just a line that always stuck in my head as a kid.
Uh-huh.
She says, "You could blast me away 1,000 times, but I'll still come back." But it's just the way she, like, goes up on 1,000 times. It's just, like, something really...
You know what's funny? I had that same sensation at the very opening of the episode, just to go back for a second, because in the very beginning in the Danger Room with Cyclops... Storm's actually in there with him fighting that monster with all the teeth and the tentacles.
Right, but it's like an illusion of them, right?
Is it?
I think they're holograms.
Oh, yeah, maybe, because Rogue's off getting coffee. I forgot about that. But, like,
it's the damsel in distress scenario.
But she, like, the way she, like, is screaming in that opening scene, she's like, "Help, help!" Yeah. Like, for some reason, that, like, brought back a flood of childhood memories of, like, watching the X-Men cartoon.
That's funny. The characters' voices in the show are so great, and there's just something... memorable about those deliveries of all these lines that just stick out in your brain and still makes it fun to watch all these years later.
Right. Anyways.
Yeah. And then here we get a line from Wolverine that summarizes, like, the confusion I had with the whole episode.
Yeah.
He says something like, "I don't know about which spirit ladies do what to which Cajuns. I'm just here to stop a wedding." And it's like, wait, are you here to, I thought
you didn't know that you were here to stop a wedding until, like, 5 minutes ago.
But. Yeah, and, like, why are you so concerned about stopping the wedding aspect as opposed to stopping the spirit lady who has got all the power?
Right.
And that, like, it's all about, like, the whole ceremony, not so much the wedding. Like, what is his... It's like, why are you here? Like, why do you care so much? Like, are you upset that Gambit's getting married? Like, are you so against, like, arranged marriages? Is that really, like, push a button for you, you know?
It's very confusing.
Yeah, don't invite Wolverine to an arranged marriage.
It's not an arranged marriage.
Well, it's like an arranged marriage. It's a four. Okay, it's a shotgun wedding.
I don't think that means what you think it means.
I know. It's a shotgun wedding.
No, it's not a shotgun wedding.
Yeah, it is.
No, it's not.
A shotgun wedding implies that the groom is being forced to be married by the father of the bride because the bride is pregnant.
Yeah.
Nobody's so it's a wedding
here.
I know, but it's a wedding. But the overall premise is that it's a wedding based on, like,
no, it's just that this woman is crazy. Killed. That's all.
I know. Listen, it's all in these genres. They all interconnect.
Anyway, well, I agree. Wolverine so sums it up really well in his confusion.
Right.
Also, we see like a lot more of that romantic interest between Rogue and Gambit.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Scene. Rogue is genuinely hurt when she sees that Gambit might have to be married.
Right. Well, because she is worried that Gambit actually wants to be married before they really like have the situation sorted out.
Yeah. She has a moment of panic. Yeah. Rogue really cares about Gambit, despite him sexually harassing her in the workplace numerous times.
Yeah. Well, see,
it's Stockholm syndrome.
Or it was welcome advances in their love.
Yeah, you're probably right about that.
They flirt with each other.
No, I know. I just joke when I bring that up.
Not
I think.
Love. I don't know.
Well, no, I think they're in love. I think I believe in love. I believe that the only hesitance of Rogue is that her powers just don't allow for
right
the
away.
Love. Yeah, the physical expression of it.
Yeah.
But she has a deep emotional like attachment to him. You know, them both being from the South and all, and being really beautiful, like perfect tens.
Red-haired people.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And mutants. They have a lot in common. anyway, and so then the external shows up 10 years later, and she's just as abrupt and short and, like, angry as she was the last time. And she's pissed off that the thieves have a fake tithe. I forgot the word right. And
you just sat through a whole vocabulary lesson.
She's all set to punish them. But Jean intervenes and she like shows.
Well, they try to like reason with her. They try to explain,
and then she blasts them.
Yeah,
yeah.
The thieves.
Jean puts up a quick like force field, which you don't see her do much.
Right.
But it's broken by the external power.
Right.
But then Jean implants the memories in the external that like, oh, look what just happened. You were lied to by the Assassin's Guild. And it's just funny that the external would now takes Jean's interjection into the equation, whereas a second ago she couldn't be reasoned with.
I thought it was just because it was like a mental projection instead of like a physical one.
I know, but like,
so even, like maybe she's like powerless to stop the images from coming into her brain or something.
But she's still, but like once she sees what the truth is, she's ready to reverse her decision.
Yeah.
Which is kind of like a
also
weird...
Also quite quickly. She wants an answer like right away. Yeah. Like,
I know.
She doesn't have time to spend.
She's got no
people.
Time. She's off in, like, the mysterious swamp dimension doing much more important things,
that's
like
right.
You said. Like, I don't know. So, anyway, she turns around, and she asks, like, what do you guys, like, want to happen here?
Yeah.
And Gambit says, like, spare Belle's life, take her powers. And I guess the implication is that he, through all that, he says, like, no more, like, tithe ceremonies.
Right. No more killing.
Yeah, because the external set doesn't mention that we're going to meet again in 10 years to do this again.
That's true.
She just disappears forever.
And then she helicopters away with her twisty hair braids.
Yeah, right. Yeah, she disappears into magic rainbow sparkles. and so then Gambit says something like, it's over. And I guess it is over. I mean, I guess he ended the centuries of tradition. You
right.
know, he said that it's too much of this. And Gambit gives a nice little, like, closing, like, speech to everybody. He says, I am not thief or assassin. I am an X-Man. And I am never coming back. And he doesn't. much like in the last episode where Wolverine, like, threatens Alpha Flight to never, like, touch me again.
Yeah.
Like, Gambit here, you know, says, like, I'm not coming back to this Thieves Guild.
Yeah, and then he puts his arm around Rogue and they walk off into the swampy sunset.
Right. And then we see Cyclops, he's covered in bandages. But he's much better, and he's kind of confused about Gambit's backstory as well. And
right. Jean has to explain everything.
She has to explain to him what emotions are, more or less. She's like, when people have a connection to their past, they have to see it through, and it takes some time to express it to their friends in the current day. I don't know. Like, I don't know what she says.
Yeah.
But Cyclops doesn't understand things. He says, shouldn't being an X-Men like mean more to him than his own history?
Well, she explains that like they need time to build trust,
right?
And
okay,
that's why like nobody knows about his backstory yet until today,
right?
And Cyclops, you know,
takes
offense.
And then very briefly, we catch up again on Magneto and Professor X in their never-ending Savage Land adventure.
Yeah,
this time. You know, Professor, again, they have some good dialogue between each other where Professor says something like, we've seen much suffering in our lives. And Magneto says, like, even, you know, even in this once peaceful place, like, the touch of war has entered men's hearts here because there's been destruction in the local villages and stuff. Anyway, but then this character named Barbarus, I guess, he's got four arms. He's kind of like Guru from Mortal Kombat in video game.
Mm-hmm.
He comes in and, like, hugs Magneto almost to death.
Yeah.
And Professor X saves him by dropping, like, a hornet's nest on him.
Yeah, he grabs a spear and spears the bee nest. Right. And
Barbarus is bested by bees. Can you say that five times fast along with...
It's unbelievable.
...Teeves and Tives? It's unbelievable. Yes, I suppose it is. All right. I mean, so that's the episode. So before we go, I want to just ask, like, just like your more general impressions of the episode, good, bad, you know, like what sticks out. You know?
What type of expertise am I tapping into here?
No, I want like your just like emotional current day reaction to this.
Darn, I thought I was going to get to be an expert in something else. To this episode in general?
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, it's a weird episode. It's not like any of the other ones, but I really like it. I like the strange cast of characters.
Yeah. Season 2 is turning into the season of backstories.
Yeah, which is cool.
Yeah, like, yeah. It's great. I love
it. It's
a
good time to like delve into the backstory of
all
these characters.
That's like good for any season 2 of any show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But also they have a lot of like travel adventures.
Yeah.
And, like,
oh, right, yeah.
You get down into like really mysterious like Louisiana backwaters in this episode. Yeah. Like it's, you know, pretty cool.
I think it's a great episode. It was one of my favorites as a kid.
Yeah.
Watching it as an adult, I think it's a little sillier. But its silliness is still entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
I was
laughing.
Well,
like you said, like throughout there like are some pieces that are kind of puzzling.
Right.
You know.
I mean, the whole external business is just nonsensical.
Right.
It's like did I say that like one of the strengths of the show is that they don't explain a lot, so you have to leave a lot to your imagination, and it inspires you to maybe go out and get the comics or like read about their backstories.
Yeah, right.
And that's one of the great strengths of the show is that you just dropped in the action, and you have to kind of you as the viewer are playing catch up to this like fantastical world.
Mm-hmm.
But in this episode, I feel like maybe that hurts this a little bit too much. We're dropped into this strange like, you know, swamp magic, thieves assassin world, and we're expected to like piece it together. And it's a little, it's like a little bit too off the deep end, you know, it's like just a little too crazy.
Oh, no, I kind of like it as a standalone because it's like, because you know that there's a lot more to all of that backstory to like dive into,
yeah.
I can see where you're coming from, but I think like as a casual viewer, as a kid for the first time seeing this episode, I don't think it would be like bothersome, really.
And people on the Facebook group, feel free to like fill in more of this backstory because before we watched it, I briefly read Wikipedia about it, and like a lot of this is in the comics, like Gambit with the Thieves Guild, and there is stuff with Ties. I don't think it's all the characters are the same. I think they have different names, and there's also like a wedding with Gambit that had to be aborted, and like I said, I don't think it's all the same characters. I never really read those X-Men comics, like the late 80s, early 90s ones where they would probably appear. I kind of like, when I read all the comics, I started in the 60s, I read all the way up through the like early to mid 80s, and then I like kind of, there's like a gap there where I don't remember it or I didn't read it, and then I like read the 90s ones. And then I fell off after there, with the exception of like Joss Whedon and Grant Morrison. But anyway, the point is like, that's like a little bit of like a weak spot in my X-Men encyclopedia in my brain. So I'm interested to hear more about Gambit and all this stuff. Anyway, that's all I have. As per usual, I want to recommend people to find us on Facebook, the X-Men Task Podcast Facebook group. I want people to find me on Twitter at Willie Simpson. I want people to subscribe to the podcast, rate it 5 stars, leave a review. That's always nice. And I just want to thank all the fans again. Another week went by. We eclipsed our download numbers yet again. That's like 4 weeks in a row where we've like had more downloads each and every week.
Cool.
So it's definitely, you know, people are definitely getting more interested, and it's very exciting for us.
Yeah.
And gives us a lot
very
of, like...
encouraging.
Yeah, a lot of encouragement and a lot of confidence to do some other fun and special stuff as we keep making these.
Yeah.
So that's all I have to say.
Me too.
All right, so I'm going to say goodnight.
The tithe.
chosen one, chosen one, chosen one. I like when she repeats that in his mind, like it echoes three times.
Oh.
You know what I'm talking about?
The tide.